the railroad items that used to be here in this depot. This was the jack panel for the telegraph, and these are some of the telegraph keys and founders. This is a piece that was made in the Milwaukee factory that went down in 1929, and all the screw and everything were lost. This was a panel that was preserved. Somebody drew this up with a picture of the Milwaukee Clipper. The car fairs used to permanently over here in the channel. Later on, then in the early 30s, it was moved to Speedon. We have quite a collection of the old car ferries there. There was just leave us and a sample of the flooring that was found here in the depot. These are old time railroad employees. This is from the battery jar, the battery jars, for the batteries here in the telegraph. And this is the generating. And this thing you'll find different interesting items that you can investigate later on. Political presidential buttons, collection of old watches and knives and things like that. And there's King of Alfonso's sword that went in Spain. I don't know how they got there, but in this cabinet you'll see various interesting items. Here is Rich Robinson's cane. It was constructed by a prisoner out in New York City, state of New York. He was carried by Ira, his brother, for a long time, and he passed on why Rich used to carry this cane. There's an actual photograph of the Cutler House. See there, and an actual photograph of the Mineral Springs. There's some other pictures. There's another picture of the Spring Lake, Spring House, and Spring Lake House, and the Mineral Springs. This is interesting. This background map is back in 1858, I believe it is. It shows Mill Point, it was called Mill Point and Ferrysburg. Of course, Ferrysburg was named after the ferries, and we had a mill over there, and that's where it happened to be in Ferrysburg. These are all different items that were named back to the river. This interesting bookcase over here. Our most famous political dignitary in this area was Senator Thomas Ferry, who was the son of William Ferry. And he was a senator in Washington for many years. In fact, he was the head of the Senate. And this bookcase was in his office in Washington. And when he retired and came back to Grand Haven, he brought this bookcase back to him. It's quite an interesting bookcase. And some of the books in there are from his library. But most of them are from the
me gripping his neck pinch. And here is a what I call a historical book with all different pictorial items that are interesting. In fact, from back to old logging days to this is all at Little Spring Lake. This is a beautiful hotel that Fruitport had, which is the Pomona House, which they also had a hotel in Mineral Springs there also. So this whole area is under the ground is this this mineral water that comes from the salt deposit. It was put there in the Ice Age, of course, and it all has the same property, but we don't consider it of any value today. Maybe somebody will make a motion to revive it, I don't know if it knows. So they're all pretty much explained what they are. Here's some of the fires. Now the Cutler House, you might wonder what ever happened to that. It burned in 1889. And it was never built. There is the building that was built to replace it. But and this shows about a fourth of the city was burned at the same time. That swept right down through the northeast section of the city, just right down everything, churches and the several churches and homes and the story. And this house, this was built as a hotel to replace it, but later on it was owned by the Masonic Temple, and now it's folks and villains and church. Here's some pictures of the old beach and the Model T's over there. Some of the old fires when they burned here. Many fires was a downfall of many things because everything was made out of wood and they had their old oil lamps and everything was always getting the fire started. So a lot of that's why we don't have very many old buildings left yet. Now if we want to move back this way. Well, here's interesting about pasture pigeons that used to nest down here by Fort Sheldon. And they were so big again that they darkened the sky. Huge thousands and thousands of those carrier pigeons. And that is the same painter that painted the log jam back there. This explains what happened here. And hunters used to come here and they'd ship them out for the barrel. There's a picture of Fort Sheldon, speaking of Fort Sheldon. They were going to put Grand Haven to shame here. They were going to have a settlement down there. And it would outclass Grand Haven and Spring Lake. But it didn't. It didn't come out too much. And the hotel and the whole thing was all gone. They built a railroad. They were going to have a railroad. They built it out there about 2 miles, and that was the end of it. Here's one of our patriarchs here, of Hunter Savage. Savage Street in Spring Lake was named after him. And he was in the financial circles of the area. One of the big wheels, you might say. This is what we call the Griffin, the old Griffin home. And this is Henry Griffin, who was the first sheriff. And this is Ellen and his wife, Elma. And these are some of the furniture that came from their original home. Notice how much smaller the furniture is than what they are today. Because people weren't as big. People didn't know as big. And you don't stop to think about that. But
now that you say that, it is. Last
year,
last week, I didn't pay any attention. You're right.
Yeah. We're just better fed today, I guess. Or we don't work so hard, we don't wear our legs down. And, of course, your chandelier up there would be kerosene. And every morning you'd have to fill the bottom of the kerosene and wash the globe. It'd be all black. There's a lot of interesting little things in here. This portable gas there used to be used by Mrs. Griffin. And that came from an auction out in New York State. It used to be used by Edward Copenston, English auction, like 1812. That opens up to a complete, even with some little secret compartments in it. Here you see some pictures, various pictures. And we have pictures scattered all over the place that you'll have to look individually and study and sort of familiarize with yourself. There's some of the old-time fashions. And you've seen how they used to dress. And some of the clothing. Ladies' aid would for 25 cents a piece, you would get your name in the book. Way to make money. This is a beautiful old book. That's a real treasure. That is very old. This is a typical old-time bedroom. And, of course, we didn't have any indoor plumbing. It's hard for us to imagine that way, but I can. That's where I was brought up. I used to have a feather bed just like that one. You used to have a soap spoon. Where is that soap spoon? Yeah, and that's the one. Oh, there it is, over there. And put that in the cook stove and warm it up and stick it in there in the bed to warm it up so it wouldn't get so cold when it came in. This is Mr. and Mrs. Behooks. That ornament picture over there is made out of hair. The ladies, you know, used to comb their hair out every morning and save their hair. They had those little containers there, a little hole about this, that they save the hair and then shave their hair. And then when they get accumulation of it, they design these fancy things out of the hair. Someone is quite artistic. Yes, we have another one going seriously. And here is the, you might want to move in here and see the dining room. The paneling in here came from the old Laudit home. Originally, that came here back in the shipping days. Captain Howard came over from Scotland, and you've probably heard of the Howard Foundation, which has done a lot of good things in the area. So, giving money to the colleges, and they've even helped financially help our museum. This dining room set came from the Robins. anyway. And you see the picture of what the original family looked like, and that original dining room looked like. The later on, it became the Hatton home, and then it was made into the first Grand Haven Hospital. And it served as a hospital for a number of years before they built the new hospital out where it is now. And you will find a Scotch saying across the top there. And it is, something meat that can eat and some meat that want it, but we need meat and we can eat, seeing that we're going to be
thinking.
We have quite a collection of old glassware, Chinaware, and different interesting items that have given us over the years. And everything is pretty well marked in there that you can. We would like to improve some of our labeling around here eventually, but it takes a lot of time to do that. Gertrude is really done all of it. This is a typical old time parlor with a little different atmosphere of what I showed you, the Griffin McNitt house. Showing an old secretary and a whatnot, and a cuckoo clock with the old organ and the heating stove. You can put your feet up there and relax there's a name for that kind of chair container. Over on this side is the old evidence from the old courthouse. It was torn down where the new building is now. The original building was like this, and it was built in 1900s. The fireplace over there, the original building was entirely heated by fireplaces. That particular fireplace came from the ladies' lounge. There's a portion of the old jury box, the lawyer's conference table, the witness chair, and doors from the courtroom. The original first courthouse was this chair was used. It's pretty old. This corner over here is school. Old school. Sorry. That is not finished yet. I'm still working on it. We just remodeled this whole area, put a new panel in there, and we started another clip chart here the schools and classes. Up there where the city hall is, used to be the Akeley Hall. They occupied most of that block. That was a girls' school, what you might call a preparatory for the college. And this is an interesting scrapbook made by Bessie Rogers back in 1907 and 1908. And it's a sheaf actually made all these photographs from her camera. And it's quite remarkable to think that a girl back in those days could make these interior photographs It's, I mean, it's the only that I have been able that we have around here of showing the interior of the girls' school. And this is her complete year record of that year. For all the different parties they had, and it's very interesting to look through and to see how a girl spend her year at college, but in the most important. Their school, all the classes that they taught, and the teachers, and this is Mr. Akeley himself who started the school.
That whole block
in
the city
hall
was the school?
Mm-hmm. Oh, except there was a church around there. He had about 3/4 in the press. Now it's occupied by the city hall and the old fire department and stuff.
Great.
Great.
Over here is a church furniture, and all their games in St. Paul, the Evangelical Church, and the pulpits and the games and churches. This gown was worn by Grandma Cabbage at President Garfield's long other gown over here was worn by the ladies back in 1950.
And these don't have to be like behind glass or something to keep from deteriorating?
No. This is a wedding outfit?
No. I would say that was probably an afternoon thing.
They have different outfits for different events, and they have to be just so.
And we had various images and items of all the different churches in the area. The first Reformed, of course, has been burned twice. First time it was burned by the, when the Cutler House burned. The church. And here is the kitchen, the old time. This era probably would be in the early 1900s. The type of family that I was brought up when I was a kid. I could almost just see this.
I was going to say, does it all look?
It's all just the way our kitchen looked. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that used to be my job to fill the wood box in the morning.
That is.
That's a churn.
Okay.
Yeah, we used to have one like that, and then we used to have one with a bigger one that you finish
up. One by hand?
Yeah. But this was a most sophisticated one.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of little gadgets. Over on this side is some other displays of kitchenware. Used up in that case. Some little cookbooks. This refrigerator was made here in Grand Haven. Challenge refrigerator.
Is that challenge machine now? Mm-hmm.
No.
No?
No, it's no. This different. Was it's the Papa Hubbard. Came was over in that area. This is a different challenge.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah. It was called challenge many times, and then later on it became Puffer Hubbard, and that now they've gone out of business.
What were the different compartments, like freezer, refrigerator, or?
Well, you went and put the ice in there.
Okay.
You get your ice man from there. Okay. This is your compartment.
Okay.
Where your food, and the colder things would be down here. And then, of course, you had to have a pan down underneath to empty every day. And Italian porcelain. Mm-hmm. It's over there by Bloomberg's. And in fact, they used to be there. And here are all doctors. Their cases, they carry out to their pills and their tools for operating. Here is the way they used to test your glasses. And all those are all different lenses. They just try you by trial and error.
Not to see what you get rid of.
There's a dentist set there. Mm-hmm. All the models of
metal tooth shapes. Oh, they put in metal teeth?
I don't know just how they used it.
No, I think those probably just fit them on a tool or something.
They all look like a tooth.
Yeah, see?
Maybe they didn't use gold.
I thought they used gold.
Yeah, they did.
Maybe that's mold in it.
That's probably
it. Matched up to your tooth size or
eons, right? Whatever. That's not quite right.
This is a
sound of it.
Yeah.
This is an old dentist's house or a chair. Mm-hmm. And this was their their drill. And you operate just by hand here.
I'm surprised there's not a strap to keep the patient in the chair.
Too strong a tendon.
This is a barber's chair, of course. And here's their shaving nooks. These are some of our John Miscalibur. He's still alive yet. He's about the only one I know of that's still alive.
Or you just kept your mug right there.
Yeah, kept right there.
And
when you came in to every morning, they'd come in to be shaved. They had their own mug
bag.
And you look up the ceiling and see the latest advertising.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Are you kidding, are you?
No, you're getting done. Actually, it was in a barber shop.
Oh, what an idea!
These are all different little souvenirs of different businesses here in town. Some of the old drug companies, and the doctors of Dr. Brown's shingle. Interesting, the charges, the schedule of fees. Day calls $1.50, night calls $2, and night calls 50 cents extra for out of town, and so on and so forth.
That would be a whole lot for $1.
Yeah.
There's another schedule over here. This is another schedule of doctors. You got a baby question. This is our laundry. Our laundry display with all of this. First, the Indians, and then the Spanish, and the French, and the English, and finally the Americans, and who knows what next. maybe it will be an item of archaeology when another 10,000 years from now. The first Indians trying to occupy this area was the Musketeers, sometimes known as the Prairie Indians. And the Ottawa tribe migrated from Canada down into Michigan as far as Grand River. Pottawatomie's migrated from the south up as close to the St. Joseph River, and they decided to that they wanted to move further north, so they, by trickery, they enticed the Ottawas to declare war on the Muscatetes, and they practically wiped them out. Ottawatomie Bayou out there was named after Ottawa. And of course, Ottawa is named after the county is named after Ottawa. The Muscatetes, a few of them escaped, most of them were annihilated, a few of them escaped and joined the Miamis down in the southeast part of the state. So that when our pioneer, who is the man up at the top here, is Rich Robinson, came here about in the time of 1812. He came here to escape the draft of the war. And that's what the story is. And he went to work for the American Fur Company. And of course, back our first big industry was the fur industry of the Indians. The American Fur Company appointed Rex Robinson as the leader of this whole Western Michigan area, and he made Grand Rapids his headquarters. He lived in Grand Rapids. He had a branch over here on the right across the corner there, where he bought and traded with the Indians. Then he married an Indian woman, and she later died and married her sister. He was very close to the Indians, and they had a lot of respect for them, for him. And it was through his effort that the land was ceded to the United States, first the land south of Grand River, and then later on to the north. The first really settler came was Reverend Ferry, came here to live, the first white family that came to live. He was a minister that was educated in the East, and married Amanda White, also from the East, and they came to Mackinac Island to form a mission to serve the Indians and the Army headquarters. That was the headquarters of the government controls out of Mackinac. he was there a number of years and decided to move further south because of the weather and his health and other reasons. And so he explored the whole area around Lake Michigan and took a canoe trip all the way down Wisconsin, past Milwaukee, Chicago, up, stopped at St. Joe. There was a small settlement there in the interior there at St. Joe. And then there was another family up near the where the Kamazoo River came in at Saugatuck. But he thought that the Grand River was a very interesting harbor there, and he talked to Rich Robinson, and then he went on back to Mackinac, and later on the following summer he explored the entire Grand River all the way up to Grass Lake, where the river originates. So he gave a very complete, exhaustive tour of the area. Yeah. Rich Robinson, of course, encouraged him to come here. And that fall, in 1834, he engaged a schooner on the supply and brought his family and his three children arms of porch or three, I think it's three boys who moved there. And some workmen along, and there was 21 of them all together that arrived here in that fall.
Hi, John. Oh. Sorry, I'm interrupting. Is anybody here looking for me? Okay.
Oh, okay. His children. Oh, yes. Yes. And that winter they lived over here in the barn like fur trading station over here. And then the following summer they built their own cabin over here on the corner, on the east corner. The Indians were quite curious, of course, and they were expert panhandlers. They soon found out that they were very friendly with the Indians. So there was no problems with the Indians like there were in some areas where white settlers came in. And the Stuart White, who was a brother-in-law, I think that's brother-in-law, of his wife, financed part of the development here. And between the three of them, they organized a village here, and Robinson laid out a little village here of 6 blocks square of from here to 6 and north to Everett and south to Clinton. And Robinson went down to Kalamazoo and recorded the land office. In the meantime, Terry made the long trip to Washington to have a post office appointed, and he, of course, was appointed postmaster. So that when they got back there, they discovered they had two names for the same town. And they hadn't talked about the name. Robinson had recorded the village as Grand Haven, and Ferry recorded the village of Stuart that he went after his good friend. So they got back here. They have two towns in the same village, so they finally agreed to Grand Haven. It was the best town that you would think was right here. So then, of course, the big industry was, of course, building new cabins and buildings and starting a town. The forest that extended all down the Grand River Valley, of course, was the source of lumber, and immediately they constructed a mill to build the lumber. And then on the one mill after another was built till the whole river here was lined with lumber mills. They would cut the logs up the river during the winter and pull them down the river. And you'll see a picture of one of the famous log jams. It's right up there. That a freshet of came down the river from a late storm, and they were afraid they were going to lose the whole winter supply of timber. And there you can see in the painting by Ira Cross of the frantic efforts to try to save the logs. They succeeded in doing it, and if you'd like to really find about that area, the Stuart Edward White wrote the Riverman, if you ever have a chance. We have a copy back in the office. It's very interesting about life in general here at that period. Now, of course, then from the growth of the lumbering business, of course, they needed an export to supply to ship the lumber to Chicago and Milwaukee. So the schooners, of course, was the big backbone of transportation outside of the canoe system up the rivers and the trails through the forests. And before any time of railroads or anything had been built. Of course, then these schooners were succeeded by the steam boats, and then came the railroads, and eventually the lumber business was all cut off, and other industries became into the area. And of course, as the lumber was cut off, then the farmers moved in to build farms and supply the food for the whole city. The first railroad came to the area in 1857, I think. And was over on the across the river. It was difficult to build a bridge across the Grand River because of all the log jams, and the ice in the spring would crush the bridges they were trying to build. So they built a very, very nice warehouse, and a depot with a little trains came in under cover, and all the docks and ships would dock over there to to handle the freight from there. A little ferry boat would cross our river here for 5 cents. You could go to the railroad station. Of course, this was very inconvenient for the city of Grand Haven not to have a railroad to this side of the river. So they raised a fund of $53,000 to entice the railroad company to come to build a bridge and come over to this side of the river. And in the meantime, the railroad was having difficulty over anyway because of the sand encroaching in the sand dunes over the tracks. They were continually having problems of the sand erosion. So they really had planned to come over here anyway. And later on, they
built the bridge
across over here, from here over to Spring Lake and Ferrysburg. That was the bridge. And so they abandoned that, and the city thought, well, they were coming over here anyway. They wouldn't need to pay the $53,000, but they forced them to. They over for about 10 years, finally, before the courts decided that Grand Haven wouldn't have to pay the $53,000. So, of course, that was in 1879, when they 1870, that this building was built, along with the warehouse, and this building used to extend about the same length further on down, and they cut it off in later years. So this is all that's left of the original layout. But it's quite interesting that this building is still in existence after over 110 years. So it's quite appropriate this should be a museum and preserve this and the Historical Society as well. Now, after the railroads, or before the railroads came, the best way to get up to Grand Rapids was by the riverboats. They had riverboats as similar as they have down in Ohio and Mississippi, and these paddle wheels would draw very little draft, and they would you could for a day you could get up to Grand Rapids But it was, a dozen or so that used to fly the river back and forth. And you can see back in the ship department there, you can see some of the river boats. May Graham, Barrett, and this one, the Grand, even some of the railroads even owned some of the boats. But when the later on, the Interurban came in the late 1800s, the Interurban, which was an electric car, it was built from Grand Rapids, so they had networks all over the whole state, and the Interurban served from Grand Rapids to Fruitport, and then at Fruitport you could go to Muskegon or come to Spring Lake and Grand Haven. So instead of taking all day to go up the river boat, they could, in an hour, they could be at Grand Rapids. So that put the river boats out of business. And of course they were always, they'd have problems with the sandbars and the shifting of the river, of course. They were continually having to build the jetties up there to keep the channel open. We still find some of those old jetties up there that you ran into with your motorboats and break your pins or your pillar. So the Interurban was very prosperous there and did a very good business, and the Interurban would turn around out here at the beach. That was the end of the line. And there, before the Interurban, we had a little electric car that used to run from downtown. Now, if you if you look up at this picture up here, you can see that what Grand Haven, what the artist's conception of Grand Haven in 1876. it doesn't show the tracks there, but there was a little car that called the Dummy that used to run out to the beach and bring people up to, already Grand Haven Beach was famous then. The building on the left was the Cutler House, which was one of the finest hotels in the whole country. They had hot and cold running water and elevator, and it was quite an imposing edifice. Then also an attraction besides the beach was the spa, or you might call it the mineral pit. The mineral ware was discovered that it had magnetic properties. You would put a screwdriver in the water and it would magnetize it. And they thought that by drinking this water and bathing in the water, it would cure your rheumatism or arthritis or anything you're able to. It was very popular at that time. but I might say at this time, Spring Lake had stole the start on them, because a year sooner they had already built mineral baths over in Spring Lake. You see the little picture to the right there is the Spring Lake House, which is quite a nice house, hotel, and the mineral baths to the right there. And so they beat the Grand Haven by a year, and they discovered they had the same water over here, and they built a quite imposing bath and spa there. It was considered the one of the best of the country. And then with the handy Cutler House there. So that now that we had, the lumber industry was beginning to fade, by it was quite successful to keep the the city in other business. Now the I started to talk about the dummy mine was a little car that was pulled by a little dummy engine, steam engine. They used to pull it out. There's a little picture around there. The only picture we have of it is a little picture of it, which is somebody on the table. And there's one of them. But
they electric.
Well, later when the interurban came to town, they electrified it. They kept it in operation, and it had in the cities they operated them with an overhead trolley, and then the interurbans out in the country would get their power from a third rail, and used to have trouble with the horses and the cattle getting tangled up with the third rail and getting electrocuted. And but as soon as they came into the urban areas, they operated the trolleys. And you see a little model of that. That's a model of a little car that originally used to be pulled by the dummy engine.
That's the dummy mine engine.
Yeah, and that's a model after it was electrified. And you find all along that, all the interurban and things of that nature, you'll find on this side of the big, the baggage cart. This baggage cart was operated out of this railroad station. And you'll find railroad items on the left side there, the left side of the baggage. This is, we were fortunate that we could secure this old baggage cart. It's quite interesting. It's pulled by hand. You see the handle down underneath there. It's pulled by hand. And turned around the other way. We didn't want you to fall over the handle. Now, the Cutler House was operated by the Cutlers. You see their portraits back there, Mr. and Mrs. Carter. Cutler.
Or could you move around
and
take the tape?
Well,
would that be all right?
Yes, I.
Before
we were here, I mentioned this is a Johnston Boiler corner here, some of their buildings, and the roll desk office that used to be in the old Matt Johnson, and they're one of the oldest industries. First, it was over on the where the construction aggregates is, and then later moved over to Ferrisburg. But they used to build ships originally. Then when the steam engine or the steam boats came into existence, they used to supply the boilers for the steamships, and that's how they got in from the boiler factory. And they're still building, now they're building boiler factories and steam furnaces and all that sort of thing. And you find some interesting pictures here of the old, these drawers are full of the old man Johnston's scrapbooks and records and very very interesting things. And it's quite interesting that they were in operation over 100 years too.
But can people look through the desk?
No, we don't encourage that. Someday we might have a special display. We have these special displays there at times. Right now it's the basket, and we expect to have another special display later on sometime. Now there's one more thing I'd like to say while we're here. Here is what the city looks like. We have the mayors of all the different cities. Fenway, Greenview, and Ferrisburg. This was the first public building constructed. It was used as a church, school, and a courthouse, and any public function was held in this building. It used to be right over here where Secondary Street. And the, of course, Reverend Perry was the preacher, and held services every week. And his sister-in-law, Mary White, is the was the first. She came here, and 2 years later, after they came, and taught school, Sunday school, and lived here all. She was just going to be here a few years, but she ended up living here until she really left. And she is quite a Mary White School is named after Mary White. And we have a picture of the first. Now, in 1867, Grand Haven was organized as a city. In 1869, Spring Lake became a village. Previously, Spring Lake had been known as Mill Point, as you might surmise, because of all the lumber mills. And so they just celebrated their centennial here back in 69. And we consider they lived the first time they had a council and organized a manager, city manager. Here you can see the fronts of the station that was terminal there. And back before they went to the south. And here you see all the Indian relics. Back there is the desk that was used by Reverend Perry. And various very family information that we have here. Over in this corner, you'll see a shipping center. These beautiful steamships that used to come in here, rivers flying on the south of the land. And it was the thing to spend your vacation was to take a tour to the
Space Lakes.
It was, if you ever, it's a kind of Japan thing. They'd be out of business, but of course the railroads and the automobile. I might say that I neglected to mention that the interurbans went out of business in late 1920s and went bankrupt because then they started to build automobiles and good roads. Of course, you can realize that they were out of business. And now the railroads are put out of business, Our last use here in this depot as a passenger station was 1950 something, or 1950 something.
1950 was
that? The last passenger station came through this depot. Mm-hmm.
55. 55. So, 25 years ago, this was still being used.